Last Monday night, September the 11th, within 50 metres of the air traffic control tower at Sydney Airport, a detached EV battery, which had been damaged, removed from the vehicle, and just left out in the elements for some time on the pavement by an epic genius or geniuses, it just caught fire and engulfed five surrounding vehicles, including the vehicle from which it was extracted. The only thing more pathetic and irresponsible than the confluence of events that led to this fire is the misrepresentative and zero-value way the mainstream media covered the entire incident. I'm John Cadogan from AutoExpert.com.au, Newcast Cheap, Australia-only website, card. Here's what happened. I reviewed this coverage from Channel 7. A bystander's mobile phone footage pans right and then tilts up from the fire to the control tower. The yellow posts at the roadside, the position of the gatehouse relative to the tower, and the orientation of the external spiral staircase relative to the tower reveals the position of the phone camera. This is from Google Maps. Phone camera here, fire there. This is confirmed by this news release footage from Fire and Rescue New South Wales. The galvanised light pole in the corner, the chain link fences to the left and dead ahead, the position of the hedgerows, etc. This fire appears almost certainly to have taken place deep inside the rectum of the Europcar car rental holding yard. I'm inferring, therefore, that this event orbits a rental MG ZS EV and the battery was removed by Europcar or by persons authorised by Europcar to do that removal. I have no idea why this was not done at an authorised dealership where presumably there are people trained and authorised to do work of this nature on something this potentially dangerous in a facility with equipment and procedures designed specifically to mitigate these risks. If Trev or Muzz did this in Mummy's driveway, we'd be pulling their trousers properly down and opening rather the large can of whoop-ass, would we not? Isn't it worse if a large company acts this stupidly and negligently? So, fire here, critical piece of the city's infrastructure there, about 50 metres betwixt. Hold that thought.
Someone has removed the battery some time ago, and that battery had suffered some damage, whether it was from an accident or hitting some debris on the road.
Fire and Rescue New South Wales Superintendent Adam Dewberry there, speaking on Nine's Today Show. The vehicle is an MG ZS EV. It was damaged. Some moron probably drove over Christ knows what, damaged the battery, cracked the case, whatever, and the vehicle came back to Europcar and went, on the balance of probability, straight into the too hard basket, got parked up the back corner, and someone thought it would be a brilliant idea to get the battery out. The battery, ruptured, just sat on the tarmac, apparently for days, with a hole in it. And all of that preposterous energy, let's not forget. Solid plan, dudes. 50-ish kilowatt hours of energy with its dick just hanging out in the breeze. Enough energy down there to push the whole fucking car to Canberra. 50 metres from the air traffic control tower of the nation's largest fucking airport.
Water was able to get in, then it did catch fire, and we know the story that it's had five cars destroyed.
It is therefore entirely unfair in my estimation to point the finger at MG for this fire. You're really not supposed to leave ruptured car batteries just, you know, sitting out in the rain. They might look benign, but they're anything but. In the domain of good ideas and bad ideas, we're looking at a bad one. Especially given the proximity of the control tower. Like, Jesus, dudes. Of course, bias in the media knows absolutely no bounds. And it's usually not the kind of bias you think, right? The main biases in the media are towards conflict sensationalism and laziness. And on this, today gets a massive 2 out of a possible 3. Car explosion. 5 cars destroyed after EV battery explodes. Why stop there? We've opened the sensationalism tap. It would be rude of us not to have a dead set big drink. Car explosion. Gotta call bullshit on that, dudes. Like, extreme news sensationalism bullshit. There was no explosion. Explosion implies detonation, like supersonic shockwave. Windows getting blown out all over. Bystanders perhaps suffering barrow trauma. Didn't happen. So fuck right off, dudes. No explosion.
This is a job out at Mascot overnight. What we got is the casing for a fully electric vehicle, heavily impacted by fire. That does appear to be the area of origin. We've got radiant heat to the other vehicles around it. This vehicle here is actually the one that the battery unit had come out of.
Fire and Rescue New South Wales video news release there. They're not using the E word either, I note. Damage from radiant heat, unquote, which is what a fire generates after all. This is a deflagration, like a fire, you Nine Network morons. The battery did not even run away thermally because the airport first responders were on it so fast. They kept the temperature down, so well done. You can tell the battery did not go into catastrophic thermal runaway, mainly because it still exists. You're looking at it, or the charred remnants anyway, but it still exists. So, well done there, airport firefighters. Fills me with absolute confidence. Next time we land with the engines, you know, numbers 1 and 3 perhaps, on fire and hopefully not parked on the roof. So, I've got a lot of respect for fireys, actually. They endlessly roll out with no notice to meet interesting new people every day. And these people all have one thing in common, right? They're all having the worst days of their lives. Fire is therefore rock. And I agree with Superintendent Dewberry when he said,
no, they're very safe. Very few. I think there's about 150,000 in New South Wales, and very rarely do we have anything with electric vehicles.
I would argue that petrol and diesel vehicles are also very safe. Like, take a look at the other 4 cars that were consumed by this battery fire. None of their petrol tanks went, like, totally Michael Bay, did they? This is where the media is so preposterously lazy, contextualizing the risk, telling you what it means, perhaps even giving you actionable intelligence about what to do if you are ever confronted by a situation such as this. Let's do it like this. See, there's 6 million vehicles registered in New South Wales, and the fire and rescue dudes attend about 3,000 vehicle fires every year, roughly 60 a week on average. Overwhelmingly, they are internal combustion vehicle fires, because that's the structure of the fleet, overwhelmingly internal combustion. That's 1 in every 2,000 vehicles. Like, Jesus, you probably drove past more than 2,000 vehicles today. Statistically, one of them is going to burn this year. On that basis, if the fire risk were roughly equivalent with EVs, you'd expect in a population of 150,000 EVs, 75-ish EV fire incidents every year in New South Wales. It's 3 every 2 weeks kind of thing. There were actually 2 EV fires on the night of that extreme dipshittery in the shadow of the control tower, hilariously enough. Apparently, an electric Jesus Model 3 caught fire down near Goulburn after it crashed over debris that literally fell off the back of a truck. So I don't think we could blame the Model 3 for that any more than we might blame the MGZS EV for the disgracefully negligent treatment of its damaged battery in Mascot. But I suppose EV fires might like to have the next 10 or 12 days off, and then they can be statistically right on track. When people quote these fire statistics, however, and it is usually insufferable electric utopians screaming at the top of their lungs towards club combustion, they're just being ignorant dipshits. They go, 6 million vehicles divided by 3,000 fires equals 1 in 2,000 risk of internal combustion vehicle fire. EVs are much safer than that.
partly because they're newer, of course, like risk increases with age. And I suppose we might wait until those batteries are old and they've grown some properly Ron-Jeremy dendrites down there. But surely you can see what else is wrong with an analysis like this, this overly simple division of two numbers, right? You can see it. It's staring you in the face, dude. Come on. The risk of fire gets conflated with the powertrain invariably, like the fuel, whatever, okay? And most vehicle fires do not enjoy any kind of link between the fire and the powertrain technology slash fuel. They just don't. Have you ever stopped to consider the big causes of vehicle fires and what they might be? Like, stop now, dude. Consider it. Arson. Insurance jobs and recreational car thieves having a little bonfire at the end of their joyrides. There's also crashes, I guess. And if a crash causes a fire, which otherwise would not have occurred, or if the fire was deliberately set by the owner or some other party, I don't think we could rightly demonise the powertrain for those ones. Furthermore, I suspect dipshit modifications also cause quite a few fires. People getting the wiring preposterously wrong in the driveway, fitting a light bar or something and saying, who needs a fuse? That seems like rather a lot of extra work. Or deciding that it's a good idea to fit a hydrogen generator in the engine bay. You know, one of those quaint devices that electrolyzes water and breaks the second law of thermodynamics. If you think that, pro tip, it's a good idea, pro tip, it's not. Very easy for DIY dipshittery to burn the car to the ground in the hours to weeks ahead, dude. So many opportunities, so little time. So impossibly entertaining down the track. Some small number of fires might also be doubtless attributable to design defects or manufacturing faults, but frankly, it's been many years since there's been a full-blown Ford Pinto-style scandal. And the recall system covers that, and it works really well, at least it does here in Australia. Nobody, to my knowledge, has ever sat down on their lardy ass and produced research into fire risk in vehicles as a function of powertrain technology causally. Keyword causally. For example, if the PCB in the ABS ECU just goes poopy in its trousers and cooks off one day and burns your car to the ground, it's kind of irresponsible to lump that fire in with the powertrain technology, is it not? The powertrain is, at best, incidental in these cases, at least insofar as I can see. The risk of this kind of thing cooking the car is equal, surely, for combustion and electric. I'd suggest that vehicles are systematically quite safe, and yet 3,000 fires occur every year in a population of 6 million vehicles, and the powertrain really isn't relevant to such a big fat chunk of those fires in terms of what causes them. That leaves essentially two elephants in the room, which none of the world's laziest media and media ever cover, nor do the fireys, incidentally. Number one elephant in the room is the potential severity of an EV suffering a thermal runaway in an enclosed space, such as an underground car park or in a tunnel. See, low probability and safe are not the same thing. There's a low probability of nuclear war, but nuclear war, not safe. Generally regarded as not safe. And this is exactly that. When an EV burns, you know, the hydrofluoric acid, the cobalt compounds, the hydrogen cyanide. Bit of a bastard if you're in that car park with your wife and kids at the same time as a damaged EV cooks itself off. This is going to occur. The probability is low, yeah. But if you deploy millions of EVs, it's gonna happen eventually. That's just how systems behave. The fireys do not talk about this stuff because there is no plan to fight such a fire. And the buildings in which they occur, they are all designed only with systematic protection against conventional car fires, which you can fight with oxygen deprivation like water sprinklers and things of that nature. You cannot fight an EV in thermal runaway in the same way. If you try, it will not work. Note that I did not just say that breathing the fumes from a conventional car fire is safe. It is not. But the fumes from a battery in thermal runaway are way worse, and a conventional car fire in an enclosed space can be fought far more effectively. If there is any kind of car fire and you are anywhere near it, immediately note the direction of the smoke, dude. And if it is coming straight for you, move laterally, like to the side, and then go upwind until the smoke is blowing away from you. Do not expose yourself to that smoke, especially if the fire involves an EV. It is preposterously dangerous, wicked stuff. The second elephant in the room here is obviously the chain of events that led to that particular battery coming out of that car with a hole in it and just sitting there randomly, negligently, on the tarmac in the weather, waiting to get wet and have a short circuit and catch friggin' fire. Who is the fucking genius who decided that this conduct was acceptable? I also wonder, did they get someone licensed, like properly qualified, to work on a 400-volt electrical system to do that battery extraction? Because it ain't like pulling the battery out of your power drill, dude. It's very different. The battery in that MGZS EV makes 130 kilowatts of tractive effort. So if we just leave efficiency to one side and say it's a 130 kilowatt battery, it is designed to discharge power at that output, right? 130 kilowatts. This is very hard to conceptualize if you don't speak electricity. Your house, right? If it's running single phase power, it can probably draw 50 amps out of the grid maximum by the time that power gets into the walls, maybe 100 amps from the street, but only 50 in the walls, okay, because of convective cooling and the absence of that inside the walls. And it can only do that, the 50 amps, as long as every other house in the suburb is not also attempting to do that at the same time. So your house maxed out 11.5 kilowatts. Your house usually runs on a lot less electricity than that, but hold that thought, 11.5 kilowatts. When you see those big, fat, high-voltage cables in an EV, like you pop the hood and you have a look down there, they're the ones in the bright orange conduit, okay? They're capable of delivering the same power to the wheels as 11 or 12 houses in your street, all maxing out their electricity usage. It's a lot of electricity. When you see a battery on the ground just sitting there like that, you might probably see just a boring, inert aluminium box. I see about 40 big, fat, 15-amp arc welders all lined up, ready to rip, okay? That's what we're talking about here. You'd need to be highly trained, and I suppose also appropriately certified, to put your hands anywhere near an EV battery, especially a damaged one, because otherwise you could just strike a big fuck-off electrical arc with 130 kilowatts of DC electrical supply. You could probably weld with an electrode about that friggin' thick, but not live to tell the tale, obviously. If you were certified, trained, whatever, you'd probably know it was a bad idea just to leave such a thing out in the weather, even if it wasn't in the shadow of critical infrastructure. So I fail to see why a car rental company should get a free pass on this act of abject negligence. You would not be allowed to treat a damaged battery of this size and power in this way, in industry. That would be like a crime against humanity. There'd be people with clipboards lined up to prosecute you, right? Just leave it out in the rain, dude. What could possibly go wrong kind of thing? She'll be right. She'll be right, mate. Especially in the shadow of the control tower of the busiest fucking airport in Australia. Like, does it get any better? I couldn't write that in a script. The network would knock it back and say, nah, dude, that would never happen. So I'd suggest some appropriate regulatory agency might need to awaken from hypersleep, however briefly, and take a real interest in this kind of Keystone Cops conduct. Airport security might, I don't know, also want to have a crack at finding its ass with both hands in a mirror, in my estimation. Perhaps, I don't know, we could be less obsessed with the minutiae of passengers' fucking handbags and more concerned with what's going on with properly dangerous and energetic equipment within 50 metres of the fucking control tower. Just a suggestion, dudes, trying to be helpful. Nobody ever brought down a 787 with nail clippers, I note. The irony of this occurring on September the 11th is frankly not lost on me. It makes me reflect that I am kind of glad that this incident is seemingly just the product of a three-way between ignorance, negligence, and dipshittery. Humanity, dude, so proficient at always deploying a better idiot as technology evolves. But I do despair that this could easily have been orders of magnitude worse had it been an act of malice, which thankfully it was not. You don't need to change too many variables on this story for this to have been a proper catastrophe, which the control tower does seem, in my estimation, spectacularly vulnerable to in the circumstances.